In a world where politicians debate how many organs a woman must lose before receiving life-saving care, Jessica Valenti's abortion arrives as both a battle cry and a survival guide. This unapologetic manifesto has become required reading in feminist circles, with Gloria Steinem calling it the definitive text for understanding America's post-Roe landscape. The book's raw honesty has sparked viral TikTok discussions and celebrity endorsements from Padma Lakshmi to Mark Ruffalo. Published just 2 years after Roe's fall, Valenti's work arrives at a pivotal moment when Americans are grappling with the consequences of abortion bans in real time. As reproductive rights appear on ballots nationwide and healthcare systems buckle under restrictive laws, Valenti's central argument resonates. Abortion isn't just healthcare. It's freedom, and that freedom creates lives rather than ending them, including Valenti's own life with her daughter Lila, who wouldn't exist without the abortion that allowed Valenti to meet her future husband and build her family on her own terms. Abortion isn't something to apologize for. It's proactively, objectively good, essential for self-determination and freedom. For decades, abortion rights advocates used tentative, apologetic language that inadvertently ceded moral ground to opponents. Meanwhile, anti-abortion forces were forcing children to give birth, making women carry dead fetuses, and requiring rape victims to prove their assaults before receiving care. Despite over 80% of Americans opposing government interference in pregnancy decisions, politicians continue issuing polite statements instead of forcefully defending abortion rights. The fundamental reality is that abortion creates lives rather than ending them. Valenti's own abortion at 28 allowed her to write her first book and meet her future husband. Without it, she wouldn't have her daughter Lila, her career, or possibly even her life after experiencing a dangerous second pregnancy. The anti-abortion movement falsely divides women into those who have abortions and those who have children, when most often, women are both. They ask what remarkable babies might have been born, never considering that women themselves might change the world if given the chance. Abortion is remarkably common and safe. 1 in 4 American women will have an abortion in her lifetime, and 99% don't regret it, with most feeling relief afterward. Any negative feelings typically stem from community stigma rather than the procedure itself. Despite decades of research proving both procedural and medication abortions are safe, anti-abortion groups spread misinformation, particularly targeting abortion pills since Roe's overturn. Studies examining over 124,000 abortions found more than 99% of patients had no serious complications from abortion medication, which is safer than Tylenol or Viagra. The consequences of banning abortion are devastating. The landmark Turnaway study, which followed 1,000 women for 5 years, found women denied abortions are more likely to remain with abusive partners, experience serious pregnancy complications, suffer anxiety and poor physical health, and fall into poverty. In fact, forced pregnancy quadruples the odds that a woman and her child will live below the federal poverty line. Since Roe's overturn, the situation has worsened dramatically, with research predicting a 21% increase in pregnancy-related deaths overall, 33% for Black women. Despite being portrayed as controversial, abortion rights are overwhelmingly popular among American voters, with support growing since Roe's overturn. This widespread support is deliberately obscured to allow anti-choice lawmakers to pass unpopular abortion bans against voters' wishes. Abortion rights have reached unprecedented popularity, with 85% of voters believing abortion should be legal in some or all circumstances, 70% supporting legal abortion medication, and over 80% opposing government regulation of abortion decisions. A 2023 Wall Street Journal poll found 55% of voters, including one-third of Republicans, want abortion legal for any reason. This support has translated into electoral victories, with abortion rights winning every ballot measure since Roe's overturn, even in conservative states like Kansas and Kentucky. Even in red states, majorities oppose government interference in abortion decisions. 65% of Tennessee Republicans want their state ban loosened, most Florida Republicans support restoring abortion rights, and nearly one quarter of white evangelicals voted for Ohio's abortion rights amendment. When pollsters ask whether pregnancy should be legislated at all, rather than when, nearly 80% of Americans believe abortion should remain between a patient and doctor, including 58% of Republicans, 60% of conservatives, and 75% of Catholics. The persistent myth that Americans are evenly divided on abortion exists because anti-abortion organizations have invested heavily in promoting this falsehood. They know that if Americans realized how popular reproductive rights truly are, they would recognize abortion bans as a tax on democracy. Media coverage compounds this problem through both sides' journalism that presents abortion as divisive despite overwhelming public support. Understanding abortion's massive popularity reveals abortion bans as a tax on democracy rather than just bad laws. In Ohio, Republicans went to extraordinary lengths to thwart voters, with Secretary of State Frank LaRose admitting he drafted misleading ballot language with anti-abortion groups. Despite purging 26,000 voters and spending millions to require a 60% threshold rather than 50%, Ohio voters still passed issue one resoundingly. As Rick Santorum inadvertently revealed, thank goodness that most of the states in this country don't allow you to put everything on the ballot because pure democracies are not the way to run a country. Republicans fear direct democracy because they know their position is unpopular. In 2023, Senator Mitch McConnell held a closed-door meeting about retiring the term pro-life after his commissioned poll showed Americans associated it with extremism. This marked a significant shift, as conservatives had long been considered winners of the abortion language war. But Republicans now face a messaging crisis. They don't want responsibility for medical tragedies resulting from abortion bans, yet they refuse to change their policies. Conservatives have attempted to redefine abortion by claiming it only refers to ending unwanted pregnancies, not treatments for ectopic pregnancies, miscarriages, or life-threatening conditions. Catherine Glenn Foster of Americans United for Life told Congress that a 10-year-old rape victim's pregnancy termination would not be an abortion. Similarly, Alliance Defending Freedom's Erin Hawley claimed ectopic pregnancy treatment isn't abortion because it lacks intent to end the life of the child. This focus on intent reveals how anti-abortion activists divide women into deserving and undeserving groups. Those who want to be pregnant, adhering to traditional gender roles, deserve care, while those rejecting motherhood are labeled murderers. This explains why Republicans defended IVF after Alabama's Supreme Court defined embryos as children. Women pursuing motherhood are considered good. Anti-abortion groups have invented the non-medical term maternal fetal separation procedures to replace abortion for life-threatening pregnancies. The consequences are severe. Instead of quick, safe abortions, women with non-viable or life-threatening pregnancies are forced to undergo traumatic C-sections or vaginal deliveries. In Louisiana, where doctors face 15 years in prison for performing abortions, physicians report giving women unnecessary C-sections to preserve the appearance of not doing an abortion, even when patients are only 20 weeks pregnant with non-viable fetuses. After Roe was overturned, anti-abortion legislators, lobbyists, and candidates stopped using the term abortion ban entirely. Instead, they speak of standards, consensus, and reasonable limits, all euphemisms for bans. This strategy began with Marjorie Dannenfelser of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, who replaced national ban with national standard. Republicans are pressuring media outlets to adopt their terminology, with some success. The Washington Post and ABC News have referred to bans as limits or placed ban in scare quotes. Republicans are stealthily restricting birth control access while avoiding the political backlash that would come from an outright ban. When Lindsay, a 29-year-old Georgia woman, tried to get an IUD 2 months after giving birth, her insurance refused coverage unless it was medically necessary, citing sanctity of life concerns. The cost without coverage? $2,000. Similar cases have emerged across multiple states, with women reporting denials for various forms of contraception, from birth control pills to long-acting reversible contraceptives. The GOP's strategy is effective because it targets access rather than legality. When pharmacists can refuse emergency contraception or insurance companies deny IUD coverage, birth control might as well be banned for those who can't access it. These restrictions disproportionately impact vulnerable populations, like young women and those with low incomes. In rural areas, where healthcare options are already limited, a single refusing pharmacist can effectively eliminate access for an entire community. Some women report driving hours to find willing providers or paying hundreds in out-of-pocket costs. Crisis pregnancy centers represent the GOP's most expensive attack on contraception access. Since Roe's overturn, Republican states have dramatically increased funding for these centers. Tennessee from $3 million to $20 million, Florida from $4.5 million to $25 million, and Texas from $5 million to a staggering $100 million. While presented as supporting women's health, these centers are prohibited from providing or even discussing contraception. Instead, they often provide misleading information about contraception safety and effectiveness, with some centers falsely claiming birth control causes infertility or increases cancer risk. Conservatives have methodically laid groundwork to redefine certain contraceptives as abortifacients. Every major anti-abortion group and activist now believes hormonal contraceptives and IUDs are abortion. While some groups, like Students for Life, openly state this on their websites, most organizations hide these beliefs, knowing Americans would be horrified. This redefinition effort has already influenced state legislation, with several states attempting to restrict coverage for specific contraceptive methods based on this scientifically unfounded classification. The birth control pill, America's most popular contraceptive after sterilization, has become the anti-abortion movement's primary target. They've launched a sophisticated cultural campaign spreading this information through social media influencers, conservative pundits, and tradwife content creators who claim hormonal contraception disrupts women's natural rhythms, changes sexual preferences, and fractures families. These campaigns specifically target young women through platforms like TikTok and Instagram, often mixing legitimate wellness concerns with pseudoscientific claims about hormonal birth control. Despite these attacks, contraception remains overwhelmingly popular. 80% of voters consider protecting access deeply important, including 72% of Republicans. Even more telling, 64% of voters are less likely to support candidates who voted against the Right to Contraception Act. Recent polls show that 92% of adults consider birth control morally acceptable, and support crosses partisan, religious, and demographic lines. This widespread support has forced opponents to operate through indirect means, focusing on regulatory changes and funding restrictions rather than outright bans. Mississippi has an abortion ban with a supposed rape exception, but when investigative reporters from Mississippi Today searched for a doctor who would provide an abortion to a sexual violence victim, they couldn't find a single one willing to do so. Similar investigations in Texas, Idaho, and South Carolina yielded identical results. This reveals the fundamental truth about exceptions in abortion bans. They exist only on paper, not in reality. The gap between legislative language and practical implementation creates an insurmountable barrier for those seeking care. Sexual assault exceptions are deliberately designed to be unusable through multiple bureaucratic hurdles. Republicans require victims to report attacks to law enforcement despite knowing two-thirds of victims never go to police, often due to trauma, shame, or fear of retaliation. They add strict time limitations, typically 8 to 12 weeks, ignoring that trauma processing takes months or years. Some states, like South Carolina, force doctors to report victims' information to local sheriffs, terrifying them away from seeking care. In Arkansas and Missouri, multiple witnesses must verify the assault occurred. Anti-abortion lawmakers rely on America's victim-blaming culture to ensure victims can't access care, while falsely claiming rape-related pregnancies are rare despite evidence of 65,000 such pregnancies annually in states with abortion bans. Republicans have launched a quiet but coordinated campaign to eliminate exceptions for fatal fetal conditions, including anencephaly and trisomy 18. Crisis pregnancy centers are central to this effort, providing misleading counseling and perinatal hospice training that shames and manipulates women. These centers, often funded by state governments, lie to patients, claiming non-viable pregnancies are merely potentially life-limiting, suggesting it's safe to continue dangerous pregnancies, and warning falsely that abortion leads to breast cancer and suicide. They deliberately withhold information about the physical and emotional risks of carrying non-viable pregnancies to term. Even in states claiming to have health and life exceptions, women are routinely denied care because they're not sick enough or not close enough to death. Doctors face an impossible choice between their medical license and freedom versus providing timely care. In Tennessee, a woman with a life-threatening ectopic pregnancy waited hours while hospital lawyers prepared a legal defense before treatment. In Texas, multiple women with severe pregnancy complications were forced to travel out of state after hospitals refused care until their conditions became critical. Documentation shows hospitals requiring patients to show signs of sepsis or organ failure before intervening. Republicans promote exceptions because polling shows overwhelming support for abortion in cases of rape, 78%, health risks, 82%, and life endangerment, 84%, even among Republican voters. These exceptions allow lawmakers to appear reasonable while actually giving up nothing, since they've designed the exceptions to be functionally unusable through complex documentation requirements, mandatory waiting periods, and provider liability concerns. The result is a system where theoretical exceptions provide political cover while ensuring virtually no one can actually access care under them. When Brittany Watts suffered a miscarriage in Ohio in late 2023, a nurse called the police while ostensibly comforting her, leading to Brittany's arrest for abuse of a corpse simply because she flushed her miscarriage. This case exemplifies how, in post-Roe America, any woman could face criminalization for pregnancy outcomes, though marginalized women, particularly women of color and those with limited financial resources, face disproportionate risks of surveillance and prosecution. The history of prosecuting pregnancy outcomes extends well before Roe's reversal. Purvi Patel's case in Indiana drew national attention when she was sentenced to 20 years for feticide despite substantial medical evidence indicating a miscarriage. Melissa Ann Rowland faced murder charges in Utah after refusing a C-section resulted in stillbirth, setting a dangerous precedent for criminalizing medical decisions during pregnancy. In Mississippi, 16-year-old Rennie Gibbs faced depraved heart murder charges after delivering a stillborn, despite inconclusive evidence about the cause. These cases represent just a fraction of the estimated 1,700 pregnancy-related prosecutions between 1973 and 2020. Brittany Watts' case starkly illustrates the systemic cruelty of pregnancy criminalization. After her water broke at 21 weeks, her religiously affiliated hospital in Warren, Ohio, spent 8 critical hours debating the ethics of treating her, primarily concerned about potential legal consequences under Ohio's abortion laws. Forced to return home untreated, Brittany miscarried alone in her bathroom and subsequently suffered life-threatening hemorrhaging. When she returned to the hospital seeking emergency care, a nurse violated patient trust by calling police, falsely claiming Brittany had expressed not wanting the baby. Research from the National Advocates for Pregnant Women shows healthcare providers initiate 45% of pregnancy-related criminal reports, creating a chilling effect on women seeking necessary medical care. Alabama's Human Life Protection Act exemplifies the deceptive nature of modern anti-abortion legislation. While publicly claiming women won't face criminal charges for abortions, the state attorney general's office developed plans to circumvent this protection by repurposing chemical endangerment laws to prosecute women who take abortion medication. This law, originally intended to protect children from drug exposure, has been weaponized against pregnant women, resulting in hundreds of arrests since 2006. The post-Roe landscape has seen an expansion of criminalization beyond pregnant individuals to target support networks. New anti-trafficking laws in states like Idaho, Tennessee, and Oklahoma criminalize anyone who assists minors in accessing abortion care across state lines. These laws define abortion trafficking so broadly that even basic acts of support, lending gas money, sharing clinic information, or providing transportation, could result in felony charges carrying up to 15-year prison sentences. This expansion of criminal liability creates a web of surveillance and fear, effectively isolating pregnant people from vital support systems and healthcare resources. Recent data shows these laws disproportionately impact low-income communities and women of color, with Black women being reported to law enforcement at rates up to 10 times higher than white women for similar pregnancy outcomes. Medical professionals report increasing uncertainty about providing standard obstetric care, fearing potential criminal liability, which has led to documented delays in treatment for pregnancy complications. In 2024, Tennessee House Republicans voted against allowing child rape victims under 13 to obtain abortions, forcing even the youngest victims to carry pregnancies to term. Simultaneously, they advanced legislation making it a felony to help teens get abortions in any way, potentially imprisoning relatives or even parents for 15 years for assisting minors. This targeting of minors serves both PR and political purposes. It allows Republicans to frame extreme restrictions as protecting children, while testing radical policies that will eventually be expanded to adults. Law professor Mary Ziegler notes that minors are the canaries in the coal mine for abortion restrictions. What happens to them today comes for everyone tomorrow. Anti-abortion groups are strategically targeting young people through public education. Organizations like Contend Projects disguise themselves as secular science education while pushing anti-abortion propaganda. They're inserting themselves into public school science classes to avoid parental opt-out provisions that apply to sex education. States like North Dakota and Tennessee now require schools to show misleading videos from extremist group Live Action, with some states even threatening legal action against schools that refuse. The anti-abortion movement's attacks extend far beyond abortion itself, revealing their broader agenda to control women and strengthen white male dominance. From travel bans to speech restrictions to laws allowing civil suits against anyone helping with abortion access, the movement's true aims become clearer. Women are dying from abortion bans, just as they did before Roe. While medication abortion has made self-managed abortions safer, women are now dying in hospitals under the watch of medical professionals who could legally save them but legally can't. Rather than fixing their deadly laws, Republicans launched a preemptive PR campaign to deflect blame for inevitable deaths. They claim abortion bans aren't stopping doctors from providing care, instead blaming abortion alarmism, baseless fears, and hospital misinterpretations of supposedly clear laws. Most deaths caused by abortion bans will never make headlines or become rallying cries. They'll be nameless statistics in maternal death reports. States with restricted abortion access have 62% higher maternal death rates, with women three times more likely to die during pregnancy and infants 30% more likely to die in their first month. After Texas passed its ban, infant mortality increased by nearly 12%. Before Dr. George Tiller was murdered in 2009, the abortion provider wore a button reading, "Trust Women," a reminder that no one is better suited to make reproductive decisions than the person carrying the pregnancy. This simple yet powerful message encapsulated decades of struggle for reproductive autonomy. When a 10-year-old rape victim needed an abortion after Roe's fall, Republican politicians called it a fabrication, and media outlets questioned its veracity, despite medical documentation proving the case. This reaction foreshadowed how post-Roe horror stories would be treated, with denial, disdain, and deliberate misinformation campaigns. 2 years after Dobbs, everything abortion rights advocates warned about has come to pass, and worse. Women have been denied care for miscarriages, forced to continue non-viable pregnancies, and faced life-threatening delays in emergency care. Despite Republicans' promises never to criminalize women for seeking care across state lines, Alabama's attorney general has argued in court filings that the state could restrict travel when it has strong, legitimate interests, including preserving unborn life. He explicitly compared pregnant women to sex offenders, suggesting the state could track and restrict their whereabouts to protect fetuses, setting a dangerous precedent for surveillance and control. Republicans are now regulating what people can say about abortion, effectively creating speech restrictions that threaten both healthcare and education. After Idaho's ban passed, the University of Idaho advised staff they could no longer provide birth control to students or promote abortion, affecting everything from health services to classroom discussions. The state's No Public Funds for Abortion Act banned state employees from promoting abortion, counseling in favor of abortion, or making referrals, with penalties including 14-year prison sentences. Similar restrictions have emerged in other states, creating a chilling effect on medical education, healthcare communication, and patient counseling. There's nothing moderate about women with sepsis in the ICU or forcing raped children to give birth. Real cases have emerged of women being denied cancer treatments while pregnant, others developing severe infections while waiting for medical intervention, and teenagers forced to travel hundreds of miles for care. The center on abortion disappeared when women started needing hysterectomies because it was the only legal way to end life-threatening pregnancies. The pro-choice movement needs to stop being defensive. The consequences of bans are no longer theoretical, but documented in emergency rooms and courtrooms across the country. The goal isn't no limits abortion, but a culture that supports people throughout their pregnancies, no matter how they end. This means comprehensive healthcare access, paid family leave, affordable childcare, and the right to make personal medical decisions without government interference. Americans increasingly understand that pregnancy is too complicated to dictate by law, with polls showing growing support for abortion rights across political lines. There's no middle ground on our freedom, and we can't leave anyone behind. Whether you're a seasoned activist or new to the issue, everyone has the responsibility to do something. Combat misinformation through fact-checking and education, help people access care through funding and support networks, hold media and politicians accountable for their coverage and policies, and prevent this nightmare from being normalized through continued advocacy and resistance.